This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another year-end episode of the Doxcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the reviewable Richard Early.
Oh, I don't want to be reviewed.
That's, you can put a review for Rich Early on the internet.
No, please don't.
Does he meet your quality standards?
You know, that's interesting. The last 6 months, I think the store has gotten more Google reviews than in you know, I mean, I shouldn't say in its 25-year history, because obviously,
but I mean, Google hasn't been around.
Right, no, I know, and I get that, but I mean, say in the previous 2 years, I probably had, you know, 2 to 5 Google reviews, and now I feel like I get 2 to 5 a week.
Oh, wow.
And I'm wondering if something happened to get people, you know, using the reviews in a way, and people... I just wonder what's changed, you know. I don't think anything's changed about the store. It's like something's changed about people's behavior to do it, you know.
We all know you bought those reviews.
Yeah. So, well, the weird thing is, you know, like, we get a lot of 5 stars. We get some 4 stars. But when you see a 1 or a 2, you know something's gone wrong, you know. And so I've actually had 2 instances now where I've had a 1-star review that I got removed. I went and found... The person found out what happened, you know, so on and so forth, right?
And took care of it.
Yeah. And then I had a 2-star review recently, and I went and found the person on Facebook. That one hasn't been reviewed, but I messaged the person. I'm hoping to get some information, you know, found a mutual friend, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, anyway, that has nothing to do with anything, but it's just sort of interesting to why that's happening. So, so Josh, tell them what we're doing. And who else is here?
This is our annual year-end review, where we talk about all of the things that we can remember from this last year. And we somehow fill up a podcast or two with that knowledge. So we're joined tonight by Brad Meixner.
That's me.
And, of course, Darren Gregson.
Hello.
And we're very excited to chat about the very best of comics and board games and pop culture and whatever it is Brad's here to talk about.
Well, this is how we filled up 250 episodes, right? We do 2 year-end episodes, and then we're going to kick off the year with a 2019 preview episode, right? And then we, like, recap San Diego Comic-Con. We only have 48 left. Like, we're already, you know, cruising down Easy Street. So, hey, I just want to say, Brad, we haven't seen you for a while just because your work schedule, so it's really good to have you back, sir.
They kept me in a cage. This is the first time I got out.
And you came here.
That's right.
And to answer Josh's question, Brad's got my back on our responsibility.
That's right. And non-Tom King, non-image books from Darren.
Yeah.
So, first of all, real quick, so the Doxcast is a weekly podcast that can be found on iTunes or on ParadoxCNC.com. We record in chunks, so you might be watching this live on Facebook or Twitch right now, and we do that about once a month, sometimes more, depending on how prepared we are and or planned ahead or things like that. But we're going to be making a lot of changes in 2019, so stay tuned for a lot of exciting things. There's going to be a lot more game streaming, and we're going to have a weekly comic book show, including selling comics and doing all kinds of really cool stuff. So be ready for that change. And, meantime, our format tonight is going to be split up. We're just going to kind of roundtable. Darren's got sort of a top 10-ish comic books and graphic novels for 2018. Josh has got basically top 10 board games that he left at work for 2018. And Brad and I will fill in the gaps with... sort of top 10 pop culture or nerd events of 2018 that resonated around the store or around our community.
Now, I do want to clarify, this isn't going to be the top 10 board games that I left at work. I had a list that I left at work.
That would be a weird list.
Wouldn't it, though? Number 3, King of Tokyo. Someone took it. No idea where it went.
Wanted to play the mind with everybody over lunch. Spilled spaghetti sauce on it. Yeah.
Just left it there.
Yeah. Do you guys want to start with a comic or board game or a pop culture event?
Let's bookend it with pop culture, because I think your number one, because that's the only one that I know for sure, is probably one that we'll want to end with.
Absolutely.
So let's start with a pop culture thing and end with one.
I think I'm going to start with a pop culture thing that I asked my friend, or friend of the show, Stephen Strom, for some input on pop culture things, because he actually runs a website now for video games. He's the editor of the site and responsible for all the things that he used to just be the freelance writer for. So I thought, I'm going to go to him. He knows stuff. But anyway, he mentioned the video game Red Dead Redemption 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about it. Brad, maybe you know a little bit more than we do. But the thing that was really interesting that he cited, the reason he brought it up, is apparently it's like the number one money-making media property of all time. Like, so applying of like anything. Right, like that.
Yeah.
I don't quite know what that encompasses or means, but that statement in of itself just seems to blow my mind. Like, Brad, do you know much about?
It's since it's two in the title, it's a sequel.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was T-O-O.
Yes.
Redemption also.
you get to play as an Old West character. The first game got a lot of hype. I think this is about 3 years out from that one. I'd kind of question Steven on that. I know video games are usually the largest single-selling media piece a year, but there's no way that, like, Red Dead's outdone Star Wars. I don't buy that based on any of their numbers, because they're only on two systems and PC. But I assume that's what Steven's going by. And, yeah, it's the IT video game that children want to play and parents that don't listen to the news don't hear anything bad about.
It's like if you took Grand Theft Auto and put it in, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes.
Right? Basically an open world sort of thing where you're Clint Eastwood riding around.
Darren, do you ever think we'll see a day where we'll sit here and say that comic book X was the number one media property moneymaker of all time?
Well, we can say that if we want to, you know?
We should have a podcast sometime where we just tell outrageous lies about things.
Yes, I like the idea. Yeah.
All right.
Fact check it.
Give us a board game.
All right. So I'll be honest with you here. One of the troubles I've had in trying to figure out this list of top 10 board games or any thing like that is with the way board games are released now, especially with Kickstarters and things like that, a board game might be released in 2017, for example, through the Kickstarter, but then actual retail doesn't happen or widespread retail doesn't happen until 2018. So some of the things I'm going to bring up tonight are games that I've found and fallen in love with this year, but may have come out the previous year, just because that's the way things line up. So if anyone's watching or listening later and you get mad at me because that's not a 2018 thing, I'm sorry, but I'm also not. So, that being said, this game actually did come out in 2018. I think it's a good place to start. Stuffed Fables. Fantastic board game. Just very quickly, I know we've talked about it on the podcast. We've interviewed the designer. It's a storybook, essentially, that you open up, and there's a map on one side, and then story bits and other things on the other side of it. And you take your little miniatures, you're these stuffed animals that basically in the night, when their human child is asleep, they wake up and defend her against nightmares and other horrible things. And there's an ongoing story that goes through seven different chapters, and it's a beautiful design. It's a really smart design. Very easy to just hop right into. And it also goes beyond just board gaming by putting in a lot of topics, conversation topics and things. So it's meant to be played with children, even though it's got enough depth that adults can enjoy it. But it's also meant to be a conversation starter. You know, in this one, the girl wets the bed. And, or whatever. And so it's talking about that. And so you can actually talk about those sort of things with your kids while you're playing, after you're playing. And it's just such a very cool way to elevate it beyond simply entertainment. And
it's
I've
the
just,
other side of Monsters, Inc. You know, it's Stuffy's defending the baby from mm-hmm. the monsters. So. The game's great. And one of the things we talked a lot about with that is you talked about when a game comes out and how it comes out and all that kind of stuff. But that was mm-hmm. one of the things that was really interesting is and we had two different answers to this question from two different game designers. And I'm sure the other one will be a game that will be higher on the list. So, but Jerry yes. Hawthorne, you know, he said the way they're looking at game design is through is as a consumable because mm-hmm. there are so many games that come out. So he wanted to give you an experience you would remember by playing, even if you only played it through once and put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And that was his philosophy or their company's philosophy that they're developing about how to deal with 5,000 board games hitting the marketplace.
Right, and especially with a lot of legacy games coming out and story-driven games like that, scenario-based games, it definitely is a direction, or at least it's kind of become a genre or a subgenre or classification or whatever you want to call it of board games that's grown to a lot of popularity, especially with Pandemic Legacy was one of the really big ones that hit it, and we've seen a lot since then. And 2018 was no exception. There will probably be another legacy game or two on the list to bring up, but we'll get into that. It definitely is an interesting concept having a board game as a consumable. That it's like, you know, maybe this isn't going to be something you play years and years and years and years. You'll play it once and then maybe come back to it. But it's there for you. It's a wonderful experience, and then. It opens room for the other 50 board games that came out that month that you might want to try.
One thing I want to mention as we go through this is something that we're going to change at Paradox. It'll be a little more big and bold, but everything, most of what we're talking about tonight is in stock at Paradox. There's a holiday sale mm-hmm. going on in the store. But we're also able to just simply make sales to you over Facebook. So as you listen to these conversations, if there are games you're excited about, just post in the comments and I'll get a hold of you through Messenger. I can just send you a PayPal invoice, tell you how much the game is and invoices and all that kind of stuff. So keep that in mind as you're listening and watching. If there's something you want as a gift, is there something you need, just post it in the comments and afterwards we'll get to those. So,
excellent.
Darren.
Well, real quick, I just want to mention, mine are in no particular order. So I'm not saying, like, this is the least of the things, just wanted to make sure I say that. So. Stuff Fables is really good.
Yeah, well, Brian Hellebang would be disappointed because he likes his lists in descending order.
But. Well, he should be here then.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I was going to start off with the same thing. I was going to say that
Stuff Fables?
Yes, Stuff Fables.
the best comic book
novel?
Ever.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you just open the book and read through it.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that mine aren't. Mine are in alphabetical order, and I would struggle, I think, to pick a best, the number one out of the 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it easier to not do that for me. For 2018, I think that's been a fantastic year for comics. A lot of variety, as it seems to be the trend now, especially in American comics. So, you know, picking out 10 is a struggle. And if we had 20, I could pick out 20 easy. But anyway, I have 10. And Amulet is the first one. If anyone doesn't know what Amulet is, it's a Scholastic original graphic novel series. This the eighth volume. Supernova came out in September, and very anticipated book. I don't think we can fully, you know, like... you know, Marvel DC readers might, you know, if you've not seen these kind of books, you might not appreciate how much hype and how excited children are and young adults and adults are for when these new titles come out. It's almost like a Harry Potter kind of, enthusiasm and fanaticism. So, Amulet Volume 8. I can't really go into too much detail because this is the eighth volume and I don't want to spoil it if anyone, you know, if people haven't read it, but... It's a fantasy story set in a world where, you know, there's like dragons, there's magic, but there's also science and technology, and just an amazing variety of characters, beautiful artwork, very very sort of interesting characters, very likable characters that you just can't help but turn the page. I mean, these books are, you know, maybe a couple of hundred pages, maybe 150 pages long, and you just can't stop reading it. And once you finish that volume, you'll want the next one. So I would highly recommend Amulet. They're always in stock. But for all ages, for adults as well, I mean, it's a fantastic book.
Dumbledore Dies? Is that... Oh, crap. I ruined it.
What was that?
No, the boat sinks. I think
the
that's
boat
the,
sinks. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
We're just giving random spoilers to things too, that came out many, okay, many years ago.
Okay. Darth Vader's Luke's father? What?
Okay. Yeah, that was my first book. Amulet Volume 8, Supernova.
Bradley.
What?
What do you got for a pop culture?
I don't know if it, I would say that it's something that's been large and looming in the American culture, but something that has come to the forefront recently, for me at least, is we'll talk about Venom and how Venom came out. Venom is, to me, this Venom is not the movie, not tied to the character true origins, but it has done ridiculously well. It has only done, you know, $210 million in America, but its international combined total is sitting at like $850
million.
Oh, wow. So Sony's making money off of this. But I personally have not seen the movie. I have a coworker who went to it, and his first comment is, I usually like those Marvel movies, but... And I think that's something that, as the proliferation of our comic book movies go, the general population is going to be felt lied to more and more by production banners. Because, mm-hmm, like, sure, it's a Marvel property, but it's not the same Marvel, right, property. So I wonder what Marvel will do personally, because to me that seems like now you're getting slapped with bad brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like someone drinking a product, you know, drinking a beverage that's not necessarily from your production facility, but it's somehow your name or logo's on there somewhere, and now they've just, no, that, you know, left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know if I'm going to go back.
Right.
I find that interesting.
Well, you and it's, we've talked about this a lot before, too, where Marvel Studios, their only job is to make movies about Marvel Comics, whereas Sony and Warner Brothers are big production companies. And it's interesting with Venom, you basically have somebody, like years ago, Warner Brothers just took Catwoman and just made a Catwoman movie. It had nothing to do with anything. Batman wasn't in it. It was terrible by all accounts too, right? But, and here's the same sort of thing. Like, somebody's just like, oh, Venom looks cool, we'll make a movie based on that, but it doesn't have anything to do with anything, which is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, it's like, I mean, I had this argument with my friend last night. It's like, to me, Venom, the reason that the Venom character worked so much was it was both Eddie Brock and the symbiote's hatred of Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. And you completely take that out, and it's like, that's not Venom. You know, that's like, yeah, saying, I don't know what the best analogy would be.
Having seen the movie, I mean, they do set up a villain, and one thing that I would complain about the movie is when we're talking about, when Katie was talking in the previous podcast about, like, split personalities done to death. Like, the villain in the movie is a, you know, crazy rich industrialist. Whoa, you know, he's like experimenting on people, and you just throw in basically any, anti-corporate trope you can think of, and they're sort of like toss them all in the hat, and that's this movie's villain. You know, so yeah, I think. That's
but it's that's mm-hmm. I'm not saying that this needs to be talked about, but it's, to me, the more how the general population, you know, the people that are doing their research or know the difference between, you know, the Marvel red logo flipping before a movie versus the actual Disney's created flip that happens before all of their specific movies, you know.
But Shazam is coming up, and Shazam's, like, not set in the quote-unquote DCU, so it's very similar.
What is the DCU?
Like, well, yeah.
I'm confused. Can we...
Yeah.
Can that be the next podcast? Papa Rich explains the DCEU to me.
I don't think I can.
It's a pile. No.
Yeah, they're trying to make sure everybody knows Aquaman is part of it, and I'd be like, don't you want to make sure they think it's not part of it? So, all right.
Am I up again?
Yeah, you're up, Bordy.
All right, well,
Bordy Gamer.
Bordy Gamer?
Yes.
All right.
We'll confuse you.
So this is one that just came out through Kickstarter, but it is also going to retail. It should be in stores by Christmas if everything's going well. But Fireball Island, The Curse of Volkar. So for those of you who...
This sounds like a horrible 80s movie.
No, it's actually based on... So Restoration Games created this. Restoration Games, for the most part, or a good chunk of what they do at least, is they take old classic board games and they recreate them. They take the core concepts, they maybe add in a little bit, they tweak it a little so that it's a little more board gamey, a little more hobby gamerist. They've done things like Stop Thief, and I just looked up the list and I can't remember now. But they've taken Fireball Island, which was a classic 80s board game, where you know you're these guys on this island, and every so often the ancient god of the island, Volkar, gets angry and he spits these fireballs out that are these red marbles, and they go down the paths, and if they happen to go down your path and knock your guy down, then you know you suffer some kind of setback or something. And I just think that's a really interesting idea, what they're doing. And of course they've been doing this for more years than just 2018. But Fireball Island is the big one that's come up, and there are so many properties that have such great nostalgic value to a lot of people, but you either can't get them anymore or you maybe wouldn't play them because, you know, it's an old Parker Brothers board game where there was exactly 4 minutes put into the concept of it. Oh, you roll some dice, you move your guy, and if you land on someone, you draw a card, you know, or whatever. It's like...
Well, we all know... The best board games have their instructions written on the inside of the cover.
Right, yeah.
That's how you know it's a good board game.
But yeah, and it's was a wildly popular Kickstarter. They've already developed like 4 or 5 expansions that came out at the time, you know, so you could order it and get all of this stuff. So they're expanding upon the original idea. And I just think it's a really great... concept to take some of these old things and you just think about, oh, what else would be good, you know, if they went back and like redid HeroQuest or you know, name something from your childhood that you played all the time that you absolutely loved but you probably wouldn't touch that right now because it's too simple of a concept, you know, or whatever, the gameplay just doesn't appeal to you, and then, you know, taking it and reforming it, and especially with the success of Fireball Island, you know, sky's the limit here. They can probably get a lot of good licenses, and get a lot of good backing, just based on that. So, I think that's interesting. I'm excited to get it and play it. I never actually played the original. That was one that was I think it was too expensive for us to actually get when I was a child. So I never got a chance to play it. But it looks like it's just a ton of fun, and I'm looking forward to picking it up.
Do you feel that board games are... Because, I mean, you use the term nostalgia and how, mm-hmm. you know, just playing on the... tugging on those heartstrings. Do you think board games is a little bit late to the party? Because it feels like so many other things are getting relaunched, revamped, mm-hmm. recreated, re-released.
I don't think so, because if you loved something, unless you're really jaded now, you're going to be excited about it still. You know, and it's very easy to be jaded because there are a lot of things that it's like, hey, we're making Transformers movies. You're like, awesome. Oh, wait, now that I've seen it, I regret this completely. This is a terrible idea. Why did you do this? Oh, there's 4 more of them. Great. You know, it can go very wrong, but I don't know. There are cynics out there. I'm sure they're voicing their opinions on various message boards right as we speak, who are just like, why reboot this when you could just create something new? Why make it, you know? But by the same token, why not? Why not take something, especially if you can't get it anymore? You know, they don't produce Fireball Island. That's not something you can go down to Target and pick up, or Paradox for that matter. So bringing it back, and that's one of the things that I think our collective generation like to do now is to share these things with our children. You know, imagine if you had such great memories of playing Fireball Island, you know, with your brothers and sisters, and, you know, it was a family thing, and you just had so much fun with it. And then being able now to get that again. And it's a bit different. But you can take that and say, here's this thing that I loved, and share that. People love to do that now. That's a big part of our culture. Just an example, the new Smash Brothers game came out. Maybe that's on one of your pop culture lists. My kids love playing it. And I remember when the very first one came out, and I was in high school, and they play it the exact same way that my friends and I played it when the first one came out. And it's so much fun to play with them, but even just to sit and watch, because they have so much fun, and they're just yelling random things, and it's being able to do that with board games is just an extra wonderful bonus. And so I'm excited to see what else Restoration Games does, hopefully, more successful stuff like that will continue to bring people into the hobby and create more lasting memories.
Fortress America!
Maybe.
Darren, what do you got next?
Next up for me, this is a book that actually launched. This was released in 2017, but it's a monthly book, and then it ran into 2018, so I'm counting it. Batman, The White Knight by Sean Murphy. I have talked about this book before, but I just wanted to add it to my list of top books for 2018. The Joker basically is cured, and he's about sort of becoming a politician in many respects and a voice to the people, and he paints Batman to be the villain, an enemy of Gotham because of all the destruction and his carelessness in what he does when he's... he's a vigilante, basically. And it is a very interesting kind of premise, I found. And the artwork is stunningly beautiful. Some great action sequences. Sean Murphy, I just can't say enough good things about him. There's an interesting twist with Harley. I won't go into detail, but yet, Harley Quinn. If you're a fan of Harley Quinn, I would read this book. And there's a little bit hints of politics, but I think Sean Murphy has kind of... The nice thing about the way Sean Murphy wrote this book is that there's all different kinds of opinions in there, each character. There's not one voice. All the characters have different ideas and conflicting ideas, and it's how these are all brought together. And we're going to get a sequel as well, I think, in 2019, Curse of the White Knight, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, The White Knight, I think one of my favorite Batman books. 8-issue series, now collected in a $20 trade.
Yeah, the thing about Batman is you go over to the Batman shelf and there's already more great graphic novels with Batman than any other character in comics.
Yeah.
But this one pops right on the shelf next to them, I think, without a doubt. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about the art while you were talking that I don't know if we talked a lot about, but... is how influenced or mimicking it is at times of the animated series.
Definitely.
There's a panel in the first issue that is it's Batman from the title sequence of the show with the moon behind him. It's right from the well-known image that people have of the title sequence. So, and then the characters. It's very intentional throughout the whole book. I haven't finished the series. I don't know why. I'm dumb, I guess.
We talk about this all the time. There's just so many books to read. I mean, there's books I haven't finished, and I should have, that's just the way it goes sometimes. But it's there, for you to read.
Yeah, about three issues. It's a really good book. It's not just the pencils, although his pencils are just amazing, but the coloring on the book is great. I'd say the coloring actually breaks the DC House coloring a little bit, too, which is nice. That's one thing about Batman and a few of the other books. Even Batman Who Laughs that just came out today, which I think should be on a list of best books of the year, because it's like only the first issue. But even that has this... color palette that we see all the time in the DC books. That was the only thing that sort of distracted me from how good I thought that book was, if that makes sense.
It does. I read a PDF proof, and that was black and white. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was going to be color, the final book, but I really enjoyed that. I'm hoping they release like a black and white edition
They probably will because they love to make 400 editions of all their things.
Yeah. I mean, it's Jock's artwork. So.
Yeah, if you like both Batman and Less, but with Batman White Knight, I mean, it's one of those books that takes what you know about the character or the characters, takes your expectations and turns them on their head. And those are so often some of the most classic stories that people just pine for and look for.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, what do you think the book says about the Batman myth, you know, or the Batman story? Can you, and I know that's more my department than yours, but I haven't finished the book, so.
What does it say? I mean, it depends on how many, I mean, for me, like, does it say that there's always something interesting to pull from that character that you can say? Or, I mean, if I'd read more Batman stories, would I look at this and say, well, you know, I've seen this before, I've seen that, which I to be honest, I haven't really. I didn't feel like that, but I haven't read every single Batman story. So, but you know, I don't
know. The idea of the cured Joker and what would he be? What does he do free of his mental health issues, I guess?
he basically becomes a speaker, a politician. You know, he's a very, very intelligent man who, and I won't, you know, is he manipulating or is he being honest? And there's an interesting scenes where, you know, you get glimpses into what could be happening. And as the story progresses, you know, it gets more interesting. And the things he says and does are, you know, you kind of root for him in some respects, and you feel sorry for him. And that's, you know, for me, that was really interesting. And just throughout, I mean, these scenes are throughout are beautiful backdrops, great character designs, great action sequences, tender moments, you know, especially between Jack Napier, who, if anyone's watched the original Batman movie, Tim Burton one is the name of the character that gets turned into the Joker, and Sean Murphy used that for the White Knight. So Jack Napier, and just his character, he's very, very interesting, you know. So there you go.
I think my next pop culture, it's not so much a moment as it is a trend, but I think the simplest way to the soundbite is cord cutting, but it's not as simple as cord cutting. But I think these past 2 years have been, for whatever reason, 2016 and 17, and it could have been, it's interesting, because it could happen in 2013 or 2014, and it was happening then, but it's like these are the 2 years that it came into full fruition, in 17, especially in 18, where we as a society, and Brad, I you'll be a poster child for this, have just completely changed how we consume our media. So cable cord cutting is like example number one of how many people are dropping their cable companies. But it's not just that's still even the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, how do you read things? How do you watch your movies? How do you play your video games? Where do you get them? How do you know what I mean? Like, how do you obtain them? What form are they in? And all that kind of jazz. Like, I'd say that should probably be higher on the list, but it was just, you know, whatever. Like you guys said, no particular order.
Yeah, it's more like a movement, though. I mean, you're
yeah.
But we're also, I think we've had enough angry people that we've now, I think we're tipping the other way. Like, we've had Netflix, Hulu's existed, but there are so many specialized streaming services out there that it's we're getting back to a point where I'm just like, can they not just bundle together a little bit? So yeah. I'm buying, you know, you have every flavor that you want. You have Crackle out there that's focused on anime. I know there are ones that do just horror movies. There's documentary only streaming services.
And Disney's it's just like coming out with its own.
Yeah. At a certain point, you're like, I'm now spending, you know, like $60 a month on streaming services that I am not getting my full value out of. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I completely control when I watch it, how I watch it, what I watch. You know, whereas with cable, it's like, well, you know, I got to DVR it or I have to be home on a specific night at a specific time. over the Black Friday weekend, Hulu had an offer to get it for $12 for a year. So I popped on, and I've been with, you know, exclusive to Netflix for probably 2 years, other than YouTube stuff. Like, I don't have... I have cable internet, but I do not have cable to anything. And I'm starting to watch The Runaways, and I just get frustrated. I'm like, I'm paying you, and I'm getting commercials. And it's like, if you were advertising for your internal stuff, that's fine. But I'm getting, like, Sprite commercials. And it's like, to me, that's what Hulu's, like, if there becomes the great, you know, the Betamax versus VHS wars, or the Blu-ray versus HD DVD wars, like, I think that's where Hulu's downfall is going to come, is, like, if you're not giving me very specific targeted ads or ads to just promote your own stuff, like, I'm getting frustrated, I'm just going to go to Netflix. Although where they don't harass me with that stuff.
Although they're doing a really good job, and other services are too, but Hulu Live is I think, so far the most successful stable platform for watching cable TV channels without having cable TV. I realize HBO Now is a thing and stuff like that, but I mean, Hulu Live's amazing, and the recording function is fantastic. I've never had the slightest problem with anything with them at all, and it fills in the whole. You get your local affiliates, the whole bit. You know, all the problems that have existed with so many of these things. Sling TV was not stable to me at all, and I know, again, I think there are live services through YouTube, and I haven't tried all those, but. You know, that's something that they are doing really well. But I meant, too, like, you know, cable cord cutting is my example. And I still think it's why, you know, if they say, well, the NFL ratings are down. Well, sure, because you're measuring it through cable viewership, right? Probably. Yeah. And so that's where things have changed so much. But it's, you know, you were even talking about the Spider-Verse movie and how fast it's going to be out on Blu-ray. So why even go to it in the theater? And I was going to say to that, it'll be out on digital 2 weeks before it's even out on Blu-ray. So that's an even shorter window.
Well, yeah, I mean, just the turnaround time from when, like, I can't even think of how far back we need to go, but, like, maybe just 10 years. Like, you watched a movie... You were lucky if you had the disc form of it 4 months later. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Venom opened up like October 8th, and I believe December 13th stuck in my head, but Thursday's not release days. But it's like, it's due out early December. So, I mean, we're talking less than 11 weeks. Known turnaround time. So it's like, why do I even want to waste my time? Sure, you put in the fancy recliners, but you know what? People stink when there's a lot of them in there for a 7 p.m. showing, so I can sit at home, not even have to put pants on, and get just as good a quality, and only be, you know, sit in my own BO. Like, why am I going to the theater? Like, are theaters going to become a dead thing? Are we going to start paying a premium for early access to a movie? Like, okay, you know, I'll buy your digital copy for $20 and get it 2 months earlier than people that can buy it for $10. Mm-hmm. Are we going to get to that price where we're paying a premium for quick access? Because everybody wants it now. They don't want to plan. And yeah, mm-hmm. or their plans are not planning.
A couple more things on this is, one is, you know, music consumption, mm-hmm. right? I mean, go find a place where you can buy a CD in town. Right. You know, or
like Walmart still carries them, stuff like that.
Walmart and Target have their
But
sure.
That's for soccer moms that want
very
the disc
down.
In
and
But it's streaming service. It's all streaming services. You know, there's there isn't even much ownership anymore. It's $8 a month, and I have access to every song ever recorded by a human being anywhere. You know, except maybe the Beatles, because Michael Jackson won't let them go or whatever. But you know,
he's gone though.
Yeah, in the estate, whatever.
But a legacy of withholding things.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's something. But that's even in comics. I firmly don't believe that digital comics have overwhelmed real comics. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, if there were a million people reading digital comics, we'd be selling 500,000 comics instead of 20,000. You know, right. Things like that. But the thing I do find interesting when I go to Comixology. I'll occasionally, it's easier for me because of my visual impairment. I don't like reading comics digitally versus physical. It's how I grew up. It's what I like. Mm-hmm. But with my eyesight, I'm doing more of adaptive technology stuff, right? So I'll buy a trade because I can do guided view and get the panel to be as big as my 10.5-inch iPad screen here, you know. So, but what's happened, I think, is the devaluation. Because once it's only a piece of information, mm-hmm. rather than it has any collectible aspect whatsoever, I mean, I go on and I bought East of West trades mm-hmm. 2 or 3 months after they were new releases, and they're $4.99. You know, or and that's the problem is I don't you're making the choice so easy, you know, like because of the pricing differences between the stuff. Does that make sense? You know, like
mm-hmm. yeah.
there's nothing you can do. You know, it's
well, yeah, but you're getting access to the PDF file that they're sending to the printer,
mm-hmm.
so you're costing them nothing. Like they already had to prepare this PDF.
No, I know all that. Yeah. And I'm not complaining as a retailer or as a reader. Or, I mean, I'm just. It's just like it's hard to resist, and that is changing how we're doing.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's my point. So.
To me, they'd be bragging more about their sales numbers that way. Like, I don't think they're there. Like, maybe the Marvel Unlimited is a thing where it's just like Hulu. You know, it's like, oh, it's whatever. Was it $10 a month? You know, I'm just going to keep renewing. That doesn't bother me. Maybe you don't read anything for 6 months in a row. But just having the ability to pop on when you feel the need mm-hmm. and just go dig through their library that's everything that's 6 months old and be able to read it. On yep. you know, on spot rather than like, okay, the trade came out this week. I better have told Rich or John or you know that I needed it 3 weeks ago so that they could order it because you know if this is popular, it's going to be out and drive down to the store, get there, then find out it's not out. Or you know, I don't know. I would love those numbers. I don't know if they'll ever give it to us.
Yeah,
digital usage.
I think if there was a massive cultural movement to want to read comics, we would know that. And that's the whole problem, is there isn't, you know, so regardless of the medium. So the one thing that I think is doing an okay job of finding ways to balance is, I mean, board games and board game companies are trying to find a connection point. You know, look at how KeyForge is trying to get this app to work or other games. One thing, Fantasy Flight is actually doing a beautiful thing with their card game. Star Wars Destiny, Star Wars X-Wing, their cards you can get, especially in X-Wing, if you own the physical thing, you can get the app has what you own on the app. And what it allows, they can just do errata right on the cards. If they want to change the points of a ship, they just change it on the app. If they want to change the wording because it was broken, they just change it on there. You still have to play the game with the miniatures, you know?
Yeah.
But, dang, that is really cool.
Yeah.
So.
That's smart. I mean, it's, you know, what they're doing with video games, where you can just put out a patch and people can download it and suddenly, oh, this wasn't as balanced as we thought it was.
Yeah.
And... You know, then that's an argument that's been going around for years with that is, you know, companies are putting out half-finished games and letting people
day one patches
purchase their game, pay money to play in effectively a beta test, you know. And so different companies do it to different degrees, but it's an odd thing. And, you know, it definitely leaves room for there to be some bad experience, but also for a very good experience.
Josh, what do you got next?
Next, let's go ahead and we'll get one of those games that came out in 2017, but again, wasn't available widely until just this year, and that is Dinosaur Island. Dinosaur Island is a super fun game. It's essentially Jurassic Park, the board game, even though there are other games that are branded Jurassic Park. It's a better version of it. Essentially, it's at its heart, I guess you'd call it a worker placement game, where you are running a dinosaur theme park versus your other players who are also trying to run their dinosaur theme parks, and you're trying to make yours the best one by researching DNA and dinosaur recipes, creating paddocks for dinosaurs, actually cloning them, putting in like food and rides, attractions, and hiring specialists. And there's a bunch of different layers to it, but it's very well done. The game is objective based, where you draw objectives at the beginning of the game based on how long of a game you want it to be, and it's really good. It's one of those games that puts together the aesthetics. It's all steeped in 90s culture, so the color palette, the illustrations, they had some extra room on the punch board, so they included tokens that do nothing in the game but have 90s phrases on them. And so there are times when somebody does something like blocks a move that I wanted to do, and I will hand them the fart knocker token and say, thanks, fart knocker. You know, and it's just a fun part of the experience. Like, I love it when that extra little bit goes into it. A really fun aspect of the game is you have to up your security with the certain types of dinosaurs that you have and everything. Otherwise, they get loose and they eat the patrons, and that gives you negative victory points. You know, so it's all just it's very. I don't necessarily want to say tongue in cheek, but it's got a very good sense of humor about it, a very good aesthetic, and the gameplay itself is very well done. So yeah, that was one. Like I said, it was officially released in 2017, but. After the Kickstarter came out, there were a limited number of copies to actually go to retail, and then it took a while to get the other printing, and we didn't actually get it here in the store until, I think, August or September, if not even a little bit later than that. So it's just one of those games that hit really hard, and there's already an expansion out and everything else, but it's very good, and it's a lot of fun. So I would definitely put that high up on my list there.
Okay. Darren, you're up.
Yep, I'm up. So my next pick is Gideon Falls by Jeff Lemire and art by Andrea Sorrentino. This is an image book that came out earlier this year. We're on to issue 8 or 9. This is almost like a horror thriller kind of book. It's quite surreal. Part of the story is set in Gideon Falls, I believe a fictional town, and then there's a sort of a juxtaposition of a city with another character who has like mental health issues, possibly, who's obsessed with collecting litter and just artifacts from the city, just you know, trash, and. And so in the Gideon Falls is the priest who's just, you know, comes to town. The previous priest has either disappeared or has died in some mysterious circumstances. It's not always clear. It is clear that it's not. But it's a very creepy book that's quite surreal. And these characters are connected. It's unlike anything I've read. I tend not to read this sort of genre of comic now, and the artwork is quite realistic. So it adds to the creepiness when you know you see the elements that aren't natural that could be supernatural, and you don't know whether it's a dream or what you know. So it's a book that you know kind of throws you off. Even some of the panel layouts itself are quite disorientating, you know, like, you know, it's trying to, you know, Sorrentino's experimenting with trying to kind of throw you into how the character is feeling. So yeah, and I know Richard, you've talked about, I've never watched Twin Peaks, but I know you've kind of talked about it being very similar to Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of that genre, like you were saying, alluding to that it's in a genre, you know, and That's a book where, rather than necessarily groundbreaking, we're playing with the toys in the toy box of a certain type of horror, supernatural, weird story in a really good way. You know, it's a brilliant book, especially I think the artwork makes it.
Yeah,
I would think the same story with mediocre artwork would have come and gone.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
So we see that. We see that a lot in books.
I mean, that just elevates it. I mean, you know, gives it a realism. And it's quite, you know, it's not photorealistic, but it's very grounded. So when you have elements that are supernatural or surreal, it can be quite jarring, which helps.
That is true, actually. Yeah. There'll be scenes of a the sheriff talking to the new pastor or whatever. Yeah. They can be very pastel and and plain. And then two pages later is some dark visual thing that is a completely different thing.
Yeah, and all the characters are very well written and very interesting. So, I just can't... You know, I would recommend this book to anybody, really, that's interested in that kind of genre and wants to kind of read something cool. So, Gideon Falls by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino.
Brad, have you read any of the comics yet that he's...
I've heard of the titles.
that's interesting. Your description there of the way they play with the visual aspect of it and everything reminds me of a book that came out a number of years ago now called The House of Leaves, where it's, not to go too much into it, because obviously we have a lot more to discuss that's actually on topic, but, basically there's a certain degree of madness that's being depicted in the book, and sometimes you'll be reading, and the words will just start to, like, spiral on this page, like they'll go in a spiral shape instead, and there'll be even more subtle things than that you don't necessarily realize. You're just unsettled while you're reading a page, and then suddenly it becomes clear that the text is a little different here, or, and so that's fantastic. It's a great way to use the medium to its fullest, so...
Two things I'd compare that jumped to mind when you talked about both those is there's that issue of New 52 Batman. It's like number 6 where he's in the maze under Gotham, and the book turns sideways and then turns upside down, and Batman is lost in this maze and also drugged. And the comic, they literally play with the display of the page in order to share that. But then also I was going to say Snyder and Jock's Witches. And the way that the art in Witches is, and it's done a very different way, but same sort of idea of how to bring horror, leap it off the page.
Yes, so. And it works really well.
Oh, yeah.
So we've gone about the normal length of a podcast now, I believe.
Yeah, that's about right.
So I'm going to say this is our cutoff for part one. So thank you guys for joining us. We're of course going to continue now while we're recording live into part two. But if you're listening next week, we'll come back with the rest of our lists. Clearly, I don't think we're going to get to 10 full items in each category, as tends
to
be the way.
We'll
but
get to what we
we'll
get to.
We'll get through quite a few things. So we hope you enjoyed. We'd love to hear some of your ideas for. The big things that impacted you in 2018 as well. And, maybe they'll be on the next part of the list. So thank you. We'll see you on next week's DocsCast for the rest of the year in review.
This was a DocsCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clocks cast. Until next time.